Now let me welcome everybody to the Wild Wild West, a state that's untouchable like Elliot Ness. The track hits your eardrum like a slug to your chest. Pack a vest for your Jimmy in the city of sex. We in that sunshine state where the bomb ass hemp be. The state where you never find a dance floor empty and pimp speed. On a mission for them greens. Lean, mean, money making machines serving fiends. I've been in the game for 10 years making rap tunes. Ever since honeys was wearing Sassoon. Now it's 95 and they clock me and watch me. Diamond shining, looking like a Rob Liberace. It's all good from Diego to the Bay. Your city is the bomb if your city making pay. Throw up a finger if you feel the same way. Straight putting it down for California, yeah.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Ben Vigen from Postman Productions, and we're discussing New Zealand corruption and scumbaggery. And, you know, there's actually one of the largest fields of study in this country. It's kind of like the Great South Basin of scumbaggery. We're trying to tap that puppy right here, you know.
The example that you could use New Zealand as an analogy so that your American listeners might appreciate it is that what we have done, as is the case in all throughout history, is that we have allowed a small elite to gain too much control. And once they have had that control, their illegal conduct or their immoral conduct has been institutionalized, it has been legalized, it has actually been turned around so that it is a moral conduct. We think it's a good thing to send young men to die in wars. And the end result is that we have actually institutionalized the corruption. Because we let those guys get in to begin with, they've made the abnormal and the deviant behavior into being the accepted status quo behavior.
It's moral decay, more or less, isn't it?
Pretty much all. I mean, New Zealand is a country that when you drive through every single rural town, you will find in every single town statues up on schools, in the middle of the squares, wherever prominent positions of soldiers or plaques with the names of each individual person that went and fought for not just World War II, World War I, the Boer War. In fact, New Zealand population has more soldiers that have died in foreign fields than any country in the Western Hemisphere. And every single one of those soldiers should be a reminder to us of what we're doing and why we're doing it and why patriotism is not something that you just laugh at. It's not something where you stick a sports short with a corporate label on it with a label that says made in China, that it's a little bit deeper than that. Unfortunately, while we have all these great monuments and all these plaques that, when you read them and you take the time to stop and read them, are very sombering, most people just go past them because they've actually been conditioned to completely forget about them except for that one day of the year when we roll out the TV cameras and the trumpets and the old guys and the medals, and we turn it into a patriotizing, we turn it into the Hunger Games. We celebrate mass genocide, and we don't really look at what the bigger picture was. How many scientists that were not born, how many teachers that did not get to teach your classes. We've taken the best and brightest of action for over 150 years and we've murdered them.
Yeah, I think that's right. What do you say to a statue of a soldier? I think in Australia this just recently happened. There was a plaque for the unknown soldier and it says, "Only God knows his name." And just recently, they had to scratch "Only God Knows His Name" because it was deemed offensive.
It's this issue of making the trivial important while we actually overlook the bigger issues, and it goes on and on and on. I'm not a particularly, I don't believe in organized religion. I don't have a problem with it saying God because it was meant at that time with intention of that historic, so to change it is actually rewriting history. And that I find offensive.
Exactly. And it occurs to me that we're moving towards a global society that will have legalized pedophilia, Satanism crossed with New Age solipsism will be the world's religion, and power will only be held by a few wealthy banking families who have microchipped everybody, and they microchip themselves as well, but with a special imprint. So if it ever gets read by anybody, it says you have to leave this person alone. But he's got a dead body in the trunk, and he's got children, and he's got children bound and gagged in the back seats of his car. No. He's got the special chip. He's a banker. He can get away with it. Nobody else can. Right. That's kind of the society that I see being set up. And I see, in order to do that, though, you need to socially engineer every single element of what makes a man, and what makes a woman a woman. And have you noticed that since the rise of feminism in the 1970s, that the roles of men and women are actually starting to go askew, almost unnaturally so. We have an enormous propensity for divorce, single parents and things like that. I'm not bashing single parents. I'm just saying that what happens is every single time where you don't have that balance family relationship, that family unit, that loyalty, that blood tie, and what have you, you often will experience some social negative ramifications of that. I think the statistics prove this as well. Young boys who do not have a father for all or most of their life will at some point very likely obtain a criminal conviction, something like 7 times more likely than the average child who's grown up in a stable family household. And so you get the children. Sorry.
I'm just going to stop you there because you've thrown 4 or 5 different ideas, and I'd like to, because they're all relevant things. I'd like to comment on it, and then we can hopefully carry back to that vein. And the first thing is you talk about this whole issue of making pedophilia acceptable. Well, I think that again it can be provable in the sense of if you look at someone like Miley Cyrus, you look at her 3 years ago, the public image that she was portraying, which was a very innocent young schoolgirl, and she developed a following, and bang, overnight she suddenly turned into this person that's, you know, doing very explicit stuff. That's a good example of grooming for you right there. We then had the whole issue of internet porn. Now, the reality is, and I've just been talking about this with my partner, you know, I've spent portions of my life as a single male. Guess what? Male internet, you do the math. But at the same time, what I've also turned around and done, willingly or unwillingly, every time I turn around, I look at big jugs or whatever, what I've actually done is I've left a profile footprint so that if at any stage, if the state can't get me on all other bits and pieces, they can go to my Google traffic and they can find out all the things that are inside my head and say, if you don't turn around and shut up, we'll use this to embarrass you or to discredit you. So the whole issue of internet porn is actually, it's not just a grooming tool, it's a blackmail tool. Then you get into the whole issue of feminism. Now, this is where I'm on the trickiest piece of thin ice ever. But to a certain degree, I agree with you, Vinny, in the sense of, I was speaking to a friend of mine recently, turned around and said, we've created an environment where, you know, it's not just that, hey, women can go out to work, which I'm perfectly okay with, but it's a case of, I can't go out, I can't stay at home, and look, they won't actually let me look after my own kids. So effectively what they've actually, and for, you know, because if he does, the risk that he is at of having SIPs get involved, or the children go and report something, to, you know, whether they've had a bad mood with dad or the neighbours piss off, it's so easy for a male figure to get in trouble, and they will immediately sign. Generally, with the female side. So for him to stay at home, it's not that easy. So you've got two parents that have both been sent out of the house, so there is no parental guidance or hand for the kids to have. So they're getting dysfunctionalized. All the power has been taken away from the parents and put in the hands of the state. Then you get into the whole issue of one law for you and one law for other. In other words, the banker that gets, you know, let off because he's got a body in the bank. Well, the terminology that we have, it's called privilege. It's based from aristocracy or feudal days. And literally the Latin translation means, from according to Terry Pratchett, is of private law. In other words, law for the privileged or the private. The difference is, in feudal times, they also had the concept of what they call nobile obligese, or the obligation of nobility. What we're now having is a feudal system which is entirely privileged, but with no sense of obligation for the people that they're under their care. So this is a pyramid where we're meant to place all our power into their hands, but we can get we will not be looked after. The social contract has been blown up so that only Thug the Barbarian gets all the gold and all the women, and we get to basically be his serfs. That's, you know, fine, and that's what they're doing to us at a state level, base level, and they're also doing it at the family base level. And it's about taking away power from us at all levels.
Yeah, you take away your power internally, externally, and holistically. So eventually to the point you don't even believe that it's even possible to have power. Yeah. And I think this is actually one of the greatest parts of the agenda at all is learned helplessness.
Yeah.
When people feel that they're helpless, they stop trying to help. Okay, and that's exactly how the corruption and the scumbaggery and it continues and gets worse, because people don't think they can actually do anything about it, so therefore they don't do anything about it, and so therefore nothing changes. I mean, isn't that brilliant?
Correct. It's completely correct, and this is, you know, the thing is, you know, it's not about being a martyr. It's not about that I've got some superhero complex. It's the reality is I recognize that if I don't actually stand up and act, then it's, you know, and hopefully there's some other people that will take my role model or already doing it. But if they don't, I can see what the consequences are, and that scares me. So my position isn't because I'm some superhero. I come from a position of I can full sight, I can see what's happening, and I don't want that. And, you know, and also I was lucky. You know, my grandfather, Major Robinson Cox, was a man that taught me about his experiences in war, and he taught me what it was like to be a citizen and how you had to make sure that you looked after your fellow brothers and sisters. He taught me that patriotism isn't some quaint idea that you just have a little bit of a chuckle with, but it's actually important for the glue of your society. Well, and that, for that, I thank him every day.
It's because it's a contract that can be enforced and written in blood. Okay, and I think that that's what happens when you have a belief that is about more than just yourself. And that belief has to be corrupted. It has to be about selfishness and a lack of caring for others that needs to be instilled in society before those who are completely selfish and really, really run the show corruptly, mind you. That's the only way that their society can flourish. And I think what's happened now is we've come up with a system, or rather we didn't, the elite did. They came up with a system where it's so unlikely that you will wind up even seeing their scumbaggery for what it is, let alone exposing it, and so it only gets stronger and more powerful. And the real problem I find here is with the technology element, because the elite are really, really into their technology, mass surveillance and what have you.
And that's where I go back to a guy like Andrew Maguire, because really when you want what he's done, he's done the ultimate strategy for guerrilla war. If your opponent is a high-tech fixed army, you become a low-tech mobile army. And that's what he's done. And he has created an army of information. And this is, you know, what I'm doing in about a week's time. I actually leave Otago, and I'm going to be doing a very interesting thing where I'm going to be hitchhiking all around New Zealand, which is, you know, this is a coastline that's greater than Australia. I'm going to be hitchhiking all around New Zealand, and my mission is to go out and find people that are doing incredibly positive things. I've given up asking my government for help, because they're not. The only people that are going to help you is help yourself. So go out and find those people. Whether it's, if your thing is free energy, go and find the person that's doing amazing things with electric cars, solar power, whatever. If your thing is sustainable seeds, go out and do that. And this is what I'm doing, is I'm finding the people that, and this is what I learned from Andrew again, one good person that is mobilized, that is passionate, that has the courage of convictions, is better than 1,000 sleeping dwarfs. And this is what I'm seeing. I'm going out to find those giants, because they are out there.
What you just said reminds me of a line from Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, with Kevin Costner. He said, "I've seen knights shaking in their armor at the first sign of battle, and I have seen an unarmed squire pull a spear from his own body to defend a dying horse. One free man defending his home is more powerful than 10 hired soldiers. The Crusades taught me that."
Exactly, and this is the same situation, is that what I experience and what I know, because, you know, when I went to my university degree, I've probably spent more than 5 years studying terrorism from 1960s to September 11th. You know, this is what I was doing back in the 90s. Terrorism work is very simple. These guys are the terrorists, and their motivation is based in fear, and they fear you more than we fear them. And if you know that, it is not that hard. You can be standing there with no guns, no backup, no police. You know, you're one single journalist. And at the end of the day, I've seen this time and time again, and this is why I'm still alive. I have made the mean in the dark, their hearts quake, and simply because of the fact I'm the one thing that they cannot fathom. And I drag them into the light, I expose them, I bring that action out, and that's what they're afraid of. And they run miles. And, you know, sometimes, be realistic, sometimes you do get actually taken out, and that's the price that you pay. But the reality is, if I'm it, and then suddenly there's two people doing it, and then suddenly there's four people doing it, and, guess what? They're going to fold pretty damn quick.
Well, let's hope it works that way, because I've got this concern as well that if one person has a great effect, they tend to target that one individual. If a group of people start having an effect and it's underneath a leader, they'll target that leader. My perspective on this is, let's say with my radio show, for example, I've got the most widely listened to alternative radio show in New Zealand at the moment, and I don't want that sole responsibility. What I'd love to do is actually help to foster and garner other people so that they don't need me anymore. They do their own radio shows and what have you, and it makes me obsolete. What if, and I had this theory the other day, if you got 10 million listeners, all of a sudden you have to become corrupted, you have to start playing ball, otherwise they will kill you, all right, because you've got that much massive influence. Can I finish?
Yeah, sure.
So my philosophy is, what if I got a million listeners for myself and then taught 10 other people to get a million listeners for themselves? We'd still have the same effect at exposing scumbaggery without them even getting onto their radar.
I agree with you, with the exception of that I'm more than happy to be on their radar. Number one is I'm not the only person doing my line. It may seem that way at times, but the reality is, I do my job. I don't claim to be the big super cop. I'm a small town journalist, and I have a small patch, which is the South Island. That's my beat, and I do it very well, and I do it very passionately. It's me. There's you. There's guys like Nicky Hager. There are citizens journalists popping up. And again, this is what Andrew Maguire has taught. He's one person. He's a figurehead, but he's created an organisation that is more than the sum of one part. And this is what you're trying to do. You're creating something that doesn't matter. They chop your head off because there's another 10 people ready to spring up behind you. And that's how it is. You look at guys like Martin Luther King and Gandhi. They didn't get rid of these guys because they were just slightly annoying them. They got rid of them because their methodologies and tactics worked and scared the bejesus out of it. The answer is right in front of us. All we're going to do is go back to history book, find out where they actually upset the apple cart, and utilize those tactics and strategies because they work.
That's actually exactly right, isn't it? You can use the tactic of your enemy against them, just like you can use their own weapons against them. Let's say they created the internet to surveil and enslave everybody. Well, we're now using it to expose and free everybody. You see what I'm saying?
I do. My favorite martial arts, and I'm put this context, I'm not a martial arts. I have my girlfriend can beat me in an arm wrestle. I'm not a martial artist, but the one that I do like is that martial arts of Aikido, and it's a very simple principle. Is it takes your opponent's attacking force, and the bigger that opponent is, the better, and it utilizes that force on a fulcrum basis and turns it against itself. So, in other words, you use your opponent's own force to undermine him. And this is again, a strategy and a philosophy which I practice in my life every day.
In fact, somebody came up to me the other day and asked me, Vinny, what are you going to do when they come after you? And I go, well, I hope that they do, actually, because at the moment, by comparison to being tortured, exposed to sleep deprivation and what have you, I've got a whole lot to lose, so I'm kind of afraid. I hope that they do something to me like that. I hope that they reduce me to a point where I have absolutely nothing to lose, because that's when I'll find out how truly powerful I actually am.
Well, this is the point with me, Vinny. My mum has Alzheimer's, so she's not long for this world. I don't have kids. I don't have a debt. I've got nothing to lose. There is.
They got nothing to threaten you with.
Exactly. What can they do to me? You can't take anything. I'm the most dangerous guy in the world from that viewpoint. Yeah. And the reality is, again, is I'm not a martyr, I'm not a hero. Look, I'm a little guy. I stand 5'7". I'm balding on top of my head. I've got reasonably good swimming and running skills, but I'm no Brad Pitt. I just really believe and love my country. And if we don't stand up for it, we lose it all. And it's not just I love my country, and it's not just that I love you and my nation and the people on this planet. There are too many species that we cohabitate and exist upon, and we owe it to them. And if one guy that doesn't have any wife, family, or kids can't turn around and stand up against them, then we are a sad bunch of human beings.
Yeah, patriotism is not a love for one's government, it's a love for one's land and one's people. And
it's a love for one's planet. There is no other planet. Whatever we might think about space or whatever, we mess this up. There is no second game. And, aside from messing it up, I occasionally from time to time, I actually go and I take up photo and I look at planet Earth from outer space, and every time I do it, it just fills me with so much emotion, and I just think we're so privileged, and people like that look for magic. It's right in front of us. All we've got to do is brace it, we've got to believe in it, and sometimes, it hurts, but this is the difference between a tough guy and a hard guy. A hard guy wants to wrap himself in an arm and go, yeah, bro, yeah, I'm a hard man. Well, a tough guy actually accepts that sometimes you hurt, and he lives through the hurt, and he keeps marching forward. And just one small thing, I'm going to make a little bit of a plug. My partner out there, her thing is she is very much into marine life, and she's trying to do her best for the whales of New Zealand. I mean, that's her thing. I do the land. She does the sea. Her thing is the Jonah Project, which is so if you're out there and you want to donate a couple of dollars, can I recommend that you chuck a couple away towards Vinnie at Gorilla Media, but can you also chuck a couple to Jonah, because don't just help out your fellow man, help out your fellow species, because we're all in this together. We all hang together, or we all swing together.
And I also wanted to add people on encouragement on that basis too, is that sometimes donating can make the exact difference in the life of an activist, somebody being given that exact amount of money when they need it. Oh. Other times, instead of donating, if you were to spend, let's say you wanted to donate $100 or something and you earn $25 an hour, what if you devoted 4 hours of your time to activism? What if you got out there with a placard and a camera and what have you and turned it into a YouTube video? It actually has a profound effect. So
you don't even have to just protest. No one's asking everyone to be frontline troops. If your thing, you're into gardening, we'll get involved in a community garden project. If your thing is the environment, we'll go out and help clean rivers. If everybody got up and did a tiny little bit, this planet would be in such a great position. And that's all we're asking. We're not asking you to give up your entire life. We're just asking you to do something for your planet, because you owe it to your planet. This is your mother.
Well, yeah, you have to. And what's interesting is that if you're doing it and people see you doing it, they start to be encouraged to do it as well, without you even needing to say anything.
And there's another thing too which you can do, because this is another thing, a tactic I'd like to plant a little seed here. We've been having quite a bit of luck with different protests that we've been doing down here, of basically utilising arts to get people who are not necessarily involved in politics to come involved and get a bit of interest. Arts are a very powerful tool. And one of the main things which I've encouraged and set in place, which is working very well, is that I will create events which are music orientated. They're not political, they're not billed as political, they're just there for music. And I will bring good bands into people, and I have people who are into music and not political coming along, and all I do is that each set is I allow a person that has something worthwhile to say to come up and speak to the audience for 5 minutes. And that, you wouldn't believe how powerful that is. So even if you don't know what to say, but your thing is you know how to pick up a guitar, get with your friends, organize something like that so that you can entertain people, get them a sense of community and glue together. And all you're doing is, in that whole entertainment and the whole enjoyment, you're giving them 5 minutes of something to think about. And it's a lot more powerful than sitting there on a platform and speaking people or talking down to people for 40 minutes and then wondering why they're bored and why you've only got 40 people in the octagon that particular day.
You're completely correct, and you have to make exposing scumbaggery fun.
Hell yes, rule the Muppets. I mean, I do this on my show, which is it's called The Postman Show. It's on ORFM 105.4 FM, which if you Google it, there's a website, I can't remember off the top of my head, but there's a live link if you want to listen into it. But what I do in my show, besides from bringing in people that have got really interesting, like yourself, I mean, you'll be on my show very shortly. In fact, we'll rebroadcast the show onto my show. We've got Andrew Maguana, we've got Bill Morris, who's a musician, but he's also come back from the US, and we're going to talk about history and geology. What I do, apart from bringing on board really strong guests, is I mix it up with locally based music, which does three things. First of all, stabilizes me. It allows me to just chill out a wee bit and realize that, you know, it's not all about saving the world. Sometimes you're allowed to actually enjoy yourself. Number two is I make a forum to say what I'm saying that is actually palatable to people out there so that they can digest it in a way that, because we're not all people that sit down and read and digest the stuff 24/7. Some of us can just take it in small dosages. The third thing is I provide an opportunity to help promote what my local artists are doing. And in doing so, I help them make their careers and their jobs real. And I take a lot of joy out of that. And in doing so, I'm building my own alliance.
It's just like the analogy that I like to use is the lion in the long grass. There's an old story that there was a pygmy in the long grass and a lion was after him, and he got separated from his tribe and he didn't know exactly how to find them. So he stuck a flag up, and what happens is at the exact same time that the predator can suddenly know where you are and starts moving towards you, your allies also suddenly see where you are and come to help you.
Exactly. And this is the thing why, some people will say to me, they go, oh, you know, Ben, you know, things you're saying, you really need to protect yourself and be more careful and you know, don't do that. And I go, look, I'm standing right out in the middle. Anyone makes a move towards me, then people will see it and they will come to my aid. And guess what, you know, Vinny? They actually have. And you know, sometimes what really blows me away, and this is the bit that, you know, I sit there and I just roll my head. You know, I've had cases where I've basically staked out people, and for want of a better word, the stakeouts have gone terribly wrong, and I've exposed myself, and I've started to think, oh my God, you know, I really got my neck out on the chopping block. And then lo and behold, I suddenly find that there's actually, when that's all going on, I suddenly find that there are vehicles parked outside my house, their lights are on, they're smoking cigarettes, they're playing their music, and you know what, they're not there to surveil me, they're there to make sure that anybody out there is clear that this guy is actually protected and stay away. And I mean, when I mean vehicles, I mean not out there for 15 minutes. I mean from coming home at 7 o'clock and finding the same vehicle out there at 3 a.m. in the morning with the same guy in the vehicle doing the same thing, smoking cigarettes, listening to music. I don't know what, and I've had this more than once, while I don't know why or who, I don't care, but I know that I do have friends out there because there are people out there who do believe in me.
And because you put yourself in a central platform and position and what have you, again, some people do come after you, and it's not just like, you know, the government or corrupt evil ones and what have you that go after you. In fact, I've never actually had any direct contact with those kind of people whatsoever. What it is you know, the Lord of the Rings, how they have troll armies? There is a troll army out there, bro. I'm telling you, they love Facebook. They love YouTube comment sections. If you want to be out in public exposing scumbaggery, there is one thing you need to learn about social media platforms before you really start doing it, and that is how to block people, okay? Yeah. Don't try and argue with them a lot of the case, because all you do is wind up wasting hours and getting yourself frustrated and annoyed with people who are too freaking stupid. Just block and move on.
I do something a little bit different. I don't mind when someone comes onto my site and has a point of difference in me, because I don't claim to know everything. I have a simple rule, however, which is, number one, is that they must conduct themselves in a polite manner. The moment that they lose manners for me or anybody else on that site, block. Number two is they must also basically stay on subject, and they go off subject, block. Number three is that, you know, if they turn around and they start to dominate the conversation, and you know, I'll give them a gentle reminder, and if they continue to basically turn, you know, I don't have 30 minutes to answer every question, but if they continue, then I'll go block. The other thing too is it's not just about the blocking. You need to actually vet your friends, and there's a number of tricks that spammers, and they come in many shapes and sizes, will do, but you need to make sure that anybody that wants to join your friend, you really need to check their profiles carefully, and these trolls are getting pretty sophisticated, but you know, basic things like, you know, if they say they're from England and you notice that all their friends are actually from Jamaica, something's not ringing true, block. If you turn around and you discover that their profile was only set up a day ago, block. If you suddenly discover that they've got all these friends and 90% of them are your friends as well, block. That, and tying in with that, is one of the things which I've only really just instigated is that my site's fairly openly publicly, except for what I've done now is people can see the wall, but all things like who my friends are and what my movies are like and things like that, I've actually put them on a private setting, because what I also find is that these guys will come in and they will seek out information about you and what they can do. They're looking for weak points. So, you know, it's not just blocking. Learn to maintain and monitor your settings. recently, you know, with the game with the Bandidos thing, is that, you know, that this is what I've already encountered, was that I get guys coming onto my site and looking at me and making comments about my Bandido comments. And when I go look at the sites, they're all full of Harley Davidsons and, you know, Sons of Anarchy. I like Sons of Anarchy. So, oh, gee, I wonder who they're affiliated with. Not the first time I had. I had one case where I basically turned around, this guy wanted to friend me. And when I looked at his profile, I went, I don't know anybody from Saudi Arabia. And when I looked at his profile again, I went, I certainly don't know anyone that works at the military hospital and his specialty is toxicology. So I looked at his photographs, and there was a whole bunch of Korans and AK-47s, and, you know, which is the sort of things, when you think about it, are a bit funny. You don't really expect terrorists to actually kind of put that on their own profiles. But the one that really blew me away was one of his mutual friends that I found from looking at his mutual friends had integrated himself into my network, actually had a picture of him standing, of this guy, a photo taken inside the security compound of a U.S. Marine soldier standing in front of Air Force One. As soon as I found that out, I rang Alistair Thompson, who runs Scoop Media, another guy, one of us out there that does a fantastic job, huge network, followed by every single journalist in this country and respected by every single politician in this country, another Andrew Maguana. He's looked for the common ground. He hasn't sought to see enemies. He's looked for common ground. But I rang Alistair and said, look, you know, Alistair, this is what's going on. I just want you to be aware of it. So at any stage somebody starts throwing accusations at me that I'm tied up with Al-Qaeda or Islam, you can say, and actually, no, before this event, he came to me and you know, this is what occurred. So, you know, it's not just that trolls will try and stall you. They will try and discredit you by any means, and you have to be vigilant to it, but not paranoid.
Yeah, vigilant.
Vigilance, that's the one.
Yeah, vigilance, yeah. It's vigilance, but except your name's vigilant.
And vigilance we trust.
Yeah, and I'm invincible.
I like that. I can see Nestrix and Obex comics coming. I'm going to go away and think about that one, because there's some great little... The Vincinator.
Vinny for Vendetta.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of which, and I know I'm going to prick a few, you know, opinions out there, I'm not personally a big fan of Anonymous, and one of the reasons why is that, again, when we had this incident with this situation with the Air Force One and the Al-Qaeda thing, it was during that time that Alistair and I were talking on the same conversation. It was about 5 o'clock in the morning. The chairman said, have you looked at what's happening with Boston? I said, well, what's happening with Boston? And then, you know, he put me to some links, and it had all these basically armored personnel and riot police and so on that were just streaming in row after row, railway carriages into Boston. Now, this was about 2 weeks before the Occupy movement actually got mainstream media attention global wide. And my point is, have you ever heard of a riot situation where the riot police turn up before the rioters? And this is my problem, is that when we did Occupy, while it was a really good networking exercise, and I'm happy with that, what it also did was it gave the powers that be via Facebook name, rank, and serial number of every possible agitator. And everybody that gathered to it got photographed, they got surveillance, their names recorded. In some ways, Anonymous, which was part of that, basically put us on the block. And as far as like taking orders from some guy who hasn't got a mask and I don't know who is, I'm not going to do that. You know, at the end of the day, I don't expect people to believe or follow what I'm doing, but at least I always stand up and they can see my face and they will know what my truth is and by what my version of the truth, by what my authority is, and that is by the willingness for me to actually stand up and be there. In my first book, you know, I turned around, I explored all my own past, and I didn't need to do that. I was a bit of a delinquent when I was younger. I never got caught. I was actually pretty good. I was a pretty good damn, you know, criminal in my day. I did it because I wanted to show my readers that while I don't necessarily claim to have all the answers, that they could at least trust me that I would report as honestly and as accurately what I was saying from that perspective. Because, you know, I shared this, and I didn't need to, but I gave it to the readers so they would know who I was. And that doesn't go with this whole masking. I'm not behind this mask thing.
I do agree with you on that perspective, but again, it comes down to personal choice. Some people don't want their identities out there, and, you know, let's face facts here. Putting your identity out there does indeed put you at risk. Let's not deny that.
I disagree with Vinny. This look, I've been doing what I've been doing for 25 years. In my early days, you know, I've been shot at. I've had my car, my friend's car blown up. I've had break-ins, I've been threatened with death threats. You know, what I've discovered is the more I'm out there, the more that my profile is out there, the safer I am. And as I pointed out, because of who I am and what I've been doing, I'm not saying I'm invincible, you know, I'm only 5'7", for God's sake, but that position of being in public makes me a very, you know, they can't shoot me without revealing the fact that just fired the gun. If I turn around in the dark, I'm hiding in the bushes. It's a lot easier to cut my throat.
Yeah, I was actually about to say that before you cut me off. And the other element here is bravery, okay, is that fortune favors the bold. If you be bold, you'll find out that you wind up having a lot of very fortunate coincidence happening to you. Has this happened to you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's I believe in the law of synchronicity, and I do really believe in it, but it's more than that. You know, is if you are bold and if you're true to thyself, then what happens is, you know, people aren't idiots. They recognize, you know, you can fool a person once, but you can't fool them twice. And, well, some of them you can actually. But eventually, the truth, you know, people recognize what you are. If you keep doing what you're doing time and time and time again, what I find is that suddenly people that do have influences or have abilities to help me will suddenly kind of come along. And you know, sometimes because of their positions, they do it very, very subtly. But, you know, if you're bold and you're out there, people admire that and they respect it, and you will. Even your enemies respect it, right? And that's, at the end of the day, why I'm still standing. And it's I mean, synchronicity does come into it, but at the end of the day, I'm standing here because of all the support of people behind me, and I wouldn't have got that if I sort of turned around and very meekly, occasionally stuck my head up over the parrot. It's all or nothing, really.
Yeah, in fact, I'm starting to really think about this, like the whole anonymous setting and people always pseudonyms and fake names and things like that on Facebook. It's kind of irritating because I'm not trying to hide my identity or anything.
Look, it's not. Look at 1984. It's right there for you. V for Vendetta was simply Orson Welles' 1984 remade all over. What did they do? The Big Brother turns around and creates a pseudo terrorist organization as an excuse to turn around and subvert people. This is an old trick. You create the problem, you identify the problem, and then so that you can cure the problem, people say, give me all your power, please, so that you can shut it down. Yeah, this is, again, Andrew Maguana, you know, when I was turning around talking to him, like, one of the things he's best known for is the issue of piracy in Somalia. And I say to him, like, you know, Andrew, you know, how do you go about doing this? He says, well, first of all, when I'm dealing with these people, I realize that the person that carries the AK-47, he doesn't own that AK-47. He didn't buy that AK-47. And then I turn around and look at the fisherman on the boat or the freighter, and it's the same situation. That man doesn't own that freighter. He didn't own it. And inevitably what you actually find is that you find that the very people that fished out the waters in Somalia, that dumped toxic waste into Somalia, owned the boats, are the same people that then turned around and bought the guns, which they sold to the pirates, which then created a piracy issue, which then resulted in the United Nations coming in there and cracking down on these people. And, of course, it just happens to be that there's a lot of oil there. Game, set, match.
You can't make this stuff up.
You can't. Look, one of the things which I just kind of also explained. One of the reasons why I got in contact with Andrew was in my two books, I deal very much with the issue of the arms trafficking and these big aeroplanes that fly in. If everyone's seen the movie Lord of War, these are the kind of aeroplanes that I'm talking about. Now, one of these things I discovered was that New Zealand is known to be a very clean, green, you know, friendly country that doesn't get involved in dirty, dodgy stuff. Ha, ha, ha. We were actually supplying the encrypted radios to the Liberian warlord, Charles Taylor. This was on the Truth and Reconciliation of Liberian Files. That was already mentioned there. I then turned around and I discovered that the yachts, these same planes, you could just take their registration number, Google it, and find that they'd be in the newspaper articles. But I could ring the press up here before these planes flew and say, look, this plane's come in and it's a known arms trafficker, and they'll do nothing. But these planes would fly in, and what they were doing was they were here to pick up the yachts that were used for the America's Cup yacht race. This is a huge sporting event, lots of logos, lots of charity money, you know, good for laundry too, by the way. Lots of this stuff going on. Wave the flag, isn't it great? We're winning a yacht race. Blah, blah, blah. Well, they'll take these yachts and they would fly them to Valencia where they hold the races. Well, the same yachts use the encrypted radios to make sure that each other competitor doesn't know what the other one's doing. But those are the same encrypted radios which we then sell on to the warlords and the pirates that create the problems that the UN then has to come and solve. Now, I told this to Andrew, and Andrew in his online, I think it's called EcoTerra, mentioned, you know, he ran an article and he said, this is Ben Bidgen, he does this, and we've corroborated this information using WikiLeaks, and that there is a New Zealand firm, which I didn't know about at this stage, called Radiola, the recipients of a New Zealand Defence Award, that this company was shipping equipped radios to the Sudan, where former United Nations and former New Zealand Army officers were then selling those equipments to the very people carrying out the genocide, which then resulted in us getting, calling in the UN to get involved. Now, this was reported, this is WikiLeaks, this was reported in the Washington Post, and you do not get a bigger paper than the Washington Post.
Oh, apart from the New York Times. But
files also get sent to... Well, exactly. Well, it was also reported in the New York Times, I believe, but it was definitely the Washington Post. But WikiLeaks files also get sent to the New Zealand main New Zealand journalist beforehand. So this was in the Washington Post. These guys were given the exact files. This story has never once, apart from me and apart from my Andrews International Network and Washington Post, has never been reported once in New Zealand. So the very people that are there to solve the problem, you can actually trace back via the money trail to be the cause.
I think that's what you call the dissociated press.
Yeah, the dissociated manufacturing dissent.
In fact, hey, that would be a great organisation for us to start up, don't you think, Ben? The dissociated press, staffed entirely by journalists, have been fired for telling the truth.
Well, yeah, we could call it free typos to good homes. I want to just switch back into this positive thing in terms of it's very easy to identify the problems. And all this whole, people get wrapped up in like studying the New World and the Illuminati. I did that when I was 19 years old, and I rapidly concluded that all you're doing is you're going down a rabbit hole, and all you're going to do is unearth more problems and more conspiracy. These kind of conspiracies are easy to spot because they leave a blood trail that's about 1,000 miles long. You just follow the smoke and the carnage. That's how easy these guys are. It's a deliberate red herring. The real answer is to go out and find people that are solution based. And this is I come from a past of reporting on the problems, and I still will do it because it's part of who I am, and it is part important. But these days, I'm more fixated in finding people that are doing solutions. And whether this is the person that's doing a community garden, whether this is the person that's doing electric cars, whether this is the person that's finding a way to look after old people, I don't care. It's the people that are actually saying, look, I'm not going to ask the government for any help. It's the people that say, I'm going to stand up on my own two feet, and I'm going to reach into my own power, and that's what's going to be my energy source. I don't need permission to do this. I don't need to belong to an organization to do this. All I need to do is do it myself and find like-minded free spirits, free thinkers, and I'll come back to that in a point, that will walk alongside me. Not with me, but alongside me. And the free thinker is the person that can walk into a problem, and instead of saying, I'm going to do my analysis based on what my assumptions are and what I'm told, a free thinker is someone that says, I'm going to walk in here and I'm going to try my best methodology to approach this in a logical way, to quantify and reinforce the facts, and I'm going to let those facts speak for themselves. So at the end of the day, what comes up is not about what I perceive or what I think, it's simply working for the process, and the answer inevitably unfolds itself. And free thinkers are the most powerful people on this planet, and they're often the people that get laughed at the most.
Yeah, and usually by people who can't think. And that's one of my points about university now, is they don't teach critical thinking anymore. They teach students how to be critical of people who can still think despite going to university.
Well, they do, and it's kind of interesting because before I was doing my show on ORFM, I did a show at the local university down here. And this is meant to be a student radio station, and I had a huge following. I had musicians coming every week bringing me music. I had guests liking my show from all around. Basically, the feedback was extremely strong. Yet, in the end, they cancelled the show, and they wouldn't give me a reason. Like, I had been bringing in, former members of the Central Intelligence Agency. I had A-plus quality guests coming to the show, as I do work towards. What I traced back to in the end was the political science department were not happy with the fact that I was suggesting fringe ideas that people at least consider them. Not necessarily believe in them, but consider all of the arguments. So what they did was they cancelled my show. They filled it with a show on a very similar format, but that it did not at any stage preach anything other than the status quo. And they call that education. I have 2 degrees. I know what education is. I know what academic methodology is. I very rarely see it practiced in modern universities.
Yeah, see, I have a 2 degrees mobile. That's how qualified I am.
you have a QBE, Vinny.
What the hell is that? No, that's what is that?
Qualification based on experience.
Okay, because I thought I just graduated from the University of Getting Shit Done. It's in Germany.
that's the one, mate. And the thing is, again, this is, I guess, one of the things I like to plant with people. not everybody has a university degree. In fact, some people have a university degree, they don't approach methodology. People go on the internet and they're curious, they're intelligent people, and they reach out and they try and find information. I'm all behind that. What I do ask people to do is, you know, anything I've said today, whether you believe it or you don't believe it, do me one favor. Go out and find three separate sources that will, if you think it's true, find three separate sources that will validate it. And once you find those three sources, look at them. You know, have a real hard look at these people and say, the people that are validating it, did they have documented evidence? Is their name out in public? You know, it's not just the quantity of the vindication. You've got to look at the quality. And this is all you need to do. If you want to do research on it online and on the internet, you know, go ahead, be curious, dig where you can, but always verify your information. And once you've verified your information, make sure that your sources that are verifying it, that they stand up. And this in the long run will save you from going down a lot of rabbit holes and make you look stupid. If you are willing to take your time and be methodical about it, the answers will come, but you don't need to learn it all and you don't need to have a degree to do it. You just got to do it carefully like you would do any job, whether it's being a mechanic, a gardener. You know, just a little bit of care and diligence is what I'm asking of people out there.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. The problem is, though, my mechanical skills are pretty lax when it comes to doing research, reading stuff. I kind of actually going to university for 2 years put me off reading because every single thing that they ever told me to read was full of convoluted language that didn't make any sense, wasn't rational, wasn't logical, and was basically boring.
That's again part of the whole, you know, process, because at the end of the day, you know, as a writer, and I'm actually dyslexic, so that's quite a small wild sign that I'm a writer in the first place and have 2 degrees, but the language they put in at your academic is jargonized so that only that club will actually allow to do this. And this is, you know, quite normal. Like when you look at the whole issue of Latin was originally designed so that it was the language spoken so only the priests could turn around and give the blessings. It was a language which was based in law so that only the lawyer could give the legal verdict. Jargon is created to reinforce the laws of the elite. If you actually say something in plain speech, you should be able to say less, more eloquently. Or the way I like to put it is that you can be a prince and lie in the highest of language, yet be a fool and list great wisdom.
Can we ask as well that we as a people admit that we don't know what we're talking about sometimes and actually have a bit of humility. And I think this is I made this post this morning because I've been arguing with a few atheists here or there on Facebook, and every single one of them is an arrogant douchebag who kind of talks down to you sort of thing. And I was just like, well, how was that a coincidence? They all define themselves as atheists. And I'm not bagging all atheists, just every single one that I've ever spoken to. Which would number in the tens, maybe, by no means all atheists. But, yeah.
I think it's a little bit – I'm not going to sing like the atheist. What I'd say is it's a case of don't bite the dogma that feeds you. I see this in terms of where I sit is that, you know, I'll turn around and I'll look at something like the issue of chemtrails or HAARP, and I do it in a very – what I like to think a very diligent way. And I find what happens is I have one group of people that I can turn around and tell them anything they want to believe. Like, oh, yeah, HAARP's great. Chemtrails are certainly happening, blah, blah, blah. And they're not really being – they've chosen to believe something and you can't shake them off it. On the other hand, you'll have people that will turn around and say, no, that's all rubbish. And it doesn't matter what facts. They say, oh, well, that was true. It'd be peer reviewed. So you show them the peer reviews. You know, it's you're looking at two sides of the same coin. When people get stuck in a dogma and they're not willing to accept the fact that they don't know all the answers and that they really must – always recheck and reconsider their viewpoint, that's what happens. And that's, again, part of the whole divide and conquer process. At the end of the day, none of us know the answers. In your case, Vinny, I mean, you say by yourself that you're not a great reader, but what you are is that you're a seed sower. You plant ideas in people's heads, and so even if someone doesn't necessarily agree with the show, this is why I always like the show, it's you give people something that, A, makes them think. You give them something to go away and educates them a little bit. They have a laugh along the way. What you do is brilliant. You know, you don't need to be saying, this is the truth. I don't think I've ever heard you say that. You simply say, hey, isn't this an amazing concept? Let's wake our brains up and have a little bit of fun with this and play along with it and see what goes on. And that is amazing. You know, that's brilliant radio.
If you say so.
I do say so.
There's the other element here as well, is when you get given a microphone, sometimes your ego gets running away with you. So that's half of the reason why I self-deprecate a lot of the time in order to prevent that from happening. And I also hope that if in some point in time I start saying, this is the truth, it's absolute fact, and so on and so forth, and I become close-minded and totally critical of everybody and basically morph into some form of Vinnie Eastwood douchebag monster, that all of the people that I've been interviewing and so on and so forth throughout the years, people like yourself and whatnot, will come out and expose me and say, Vinnie, you're now a douchebag, nobody should listen to you. That would be my great hope.
I don't think I personally would ever turn around and do that, even if you did it, simply because I don't see the credit. I don't want to waste my energy tearing people down. I want to build people actually up, and there's much more power to be had in that than you know, tearing things down. I do agree with what you're saying, because you know, at the end of the day, you know, call it small man syndrome, whatever you have. I've got a very healthy ego. I'm very thankful for the people out there that laugh at me or, for want of a better word, get jealous of me, because they actually act as a self-built humility service. They always make me check in with myself and go, you know, what those guys doing legitimate? I'm thankful for my friends who can quite happily take the merciful Mickey out of me. Again, they bring me down to the earth. I walk a delicate line in the sense of I know it's important that I put out a profile, and I even know that the profile to a certain way is a constructed myth. But that's there for a purpose, so that I can do my job. At the end of the day, I flip myself off, I go home with my partner, I have a glass of wine, and I chill out with my friends, and I just get on with life like all the rest of us. You know, the moment that you start thinking that you're more important, and this is the thing, I smashed my neck up about 15 years ago, and sometimes I'm a real jerk, and I'm like, and I forget this. I forget that what I sometimes belittle, well, it may not be important to me, but it's important to those people. And that's another thing that I try. It's a personal thing I'm working on, but it's something I always try and work on, is that I'm not the only one out here. And the moment I really think that is the case, I am the douchebag.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, knowing something is about having that process constantly in review, I think. If you think the exact same thing today that you thought last year, it means you haven't learned anything, which means you have chosen to stop listening, stop looking, stop learning, and then there's very little way that you can do to improve yourself on that basis. If we are talking about, self-worth, okay, which means you can be insulted by somebody who's far less intelligent, far less respectful than myself, far less experienced, and basically that really doesn't know what they're talking about, even far less than I. Those people are become what I've come to term as energy vampires. They literally sap your strength, and there's no gain from it.
Look, we're running kind of close to the. So I'm going to need to probably pull out in about 4 minutes. But you know what I point out is, you know, again, Gandhi turned around and said, first, you know, when you stand out of the crowd and you try to socially motivate people, especially if it's against the status quo, first they will ignore you, then they will laugh at you, and then they will fight you, and then you win. And this is what you basically have to turn around and do. And when people turn around and laugh at me, I actually don't recognize that as a win. Because that's the second step. And what I've noticed slowly over the years, I've been doing my bits and pieces, is that, yeah, I've got people that, you know, went to the fighting stage, and now I'm at a stage where even people in my own town, that not even because of what I'm saying, you know, it's because they're going, well, he's got a platform, I want that platform, that should be right. Even those people started to realize the way that I conduct myself, that, you know, sometimes I'm a bit of a dick in a personal aspect in terms of error, but they also recognize that my heart's in the right place, and that I am loyal, and that I do stand up for my town. And, you know, slowly I'm winning these people over, one at a time. Some of them you're never going to win. Some of them I don't want to win over. I take personal satisfaction when I look at the guy that was responsible for sinking $400 million into building a football stadium as a con. I take personal satisfaction that when I walk past him and he's sitting there drinking his cup of coffee and I look at him, he shrivels. And, you know, that's it. You got all the big houses, you got all the big girls, but at the end of the day, you can't look at yourself in the mirror because you know that what you've done is wrong. And that's it.
You like creep up behind him while he's having a coffee, just going, boogie, boogie.
I was playing phone with him the other day. He sat down and I just went, oh, what the hell? I brought up my camera and I just took a photograph of him. Oh, man. For the next half an hour, that poor man was just like looking over his shoulder and getting all freaked out, and I just didn't do anything. I wasn't going to do anything with the photograph. I knew what his internal fear was like, and I played upon it. I was being a bit naughty, to be honest, but it was just, you know, I get a little bit sick and tired when I see these guys wandering around pretending like they're the most respectable people in town when they've actually done their best to actually sink, you know, this town into a debt cycle and destroy everything that 150 years worth of good people built up. The reality is, it was a test. I wanted to say, think myself, you know, what, do you go home and look at yourself in the mirror and think I'm a good guy? So I just had a little tease, and I got the answer. No, he goes home and he looks at himself and goes, I need more. I need more gems. I need more this. I need that because I don't like myself. And this is sadly what the whole childness of all of this stuff, that's what it's all based in. And I'll end with the very last point, Vinny. We all are human beings. We all have parts of us that aren't that great. And sometimes we get scared. Don't be scared. You're allowed to make mistakes. All you need to do is say, hey, I made a mistake, and go out there and do your best. Love yourself, people, because you know there's plenty of people out there who will tear you down. You've got to love yourself, and you've got to be true to yourself.
Yeah, and you've got to have fun as well. A friend of mine once went to a protest outside Parliament on Halloween, and everybody was dressed as zombies. What do we want? Brains.
Brains.
When do we want it? Brains.
You know, there's a lot of power to be had in that sort of stuff. And again, it goes back to the whole issue of art. If you have something that makes people laugh, and I mean, seriously, I mean, you look around what really gets under dictators' skins. Look, go and Google up Charlie Chaplin's speech about the dictator and find out why Hitler absolutely hated Charlie Chaplin. What that man had to say was visionary. And what I've found in my experience is that if I can find a way to make someone look ridiculous at the top, man, it's brilliant because they just flip out, and in doing so, they rip the mask off their face and they show everybody what the real colours are.
There's an old saying, how do you expose a fascist? By making them act like it.
Yep, that's the one.
Right. Ben, that's, give us a quick plug for your website and then we've got to go.
My website is www.postmanproductions.org. Do be consistent because, you know, being what I do, you quite often find that the links mysteriously don't come up. So, you know, go back every couple of days because that's what happens. I have a Facebook site, which is open. People can look at what I'm doing and monitor what I'm actually up to on my Facebook site. This is simply Ben, B-E-N, or I'll spell it phonetically for my American friends out there. That's Bravo Echo November. And then it's Vigil, which I'll also spell phonetically for you. That's Victor India Delta Golf Echo November. I say again, Victor India Delta Golf Echo November. Look at my Facebook page. It's got all my daily rants and raves actually up there. And again, I do my radio show Wednesday night, 8:30 New Zealand time. It's on the Otago Access Radio. You can just Google it. It has a link on the top left-hand screen. There is a live stream. Or what I tend to do is I put the podcast up on my show later on. So, Vinny, once again, thank you very much for having me on the show. And for those people out there listening, in the words of George Clooney, good night and good luck.
All right. And ladies and gentlemen, bear in mind, this is, again, a listener-supported broadcast. It does not exist without your continued support and donation. So please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and start off to make a monthly donation today. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. And we'll see you again sometime.